My name is Kunal, and welcome to the Geeks of the Valley podcast, which connects with some of the brightest minds globally who are leading their respective industries today to discuss the hottest upcoming industry trends and how their work is affecting the global economy. This morning from the San Francisco Bay Area, we have a very special guest joining us who used to live in Hong Kong and is the ex-valedictorian at Princeton University. Please welcome the co-founder of Polygens, Jin Cho, aka Jin Yun. Jin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Kunal. Thank you so much for having me.
And how are things over there in light of COVID-19?
Things are still a little bit crazy. It's been an extremely hectic week with protests and rallies. But the good thing, I guess, is restaurants are starting to open again, and I went out to eat for the first time in a few months now. And it's been a good week so far.
I'm really happy to hear that, Jin. Let's dive into our first question, shall we?
Sure, sounds good.
So tell me about yourself and your background and how it led you to the path of becoming an entrepreneur in edtech.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Hong Kong. I left Hong Kong at age 18 for Princeton, where I majored in comparative literature. And it was really at Princeton that I had this intellectual awakening, where I fell in love with learning languages, with literature, with the humanities. And I also fell in love with education because all throughout my 4 years at Princeton, I did a lot of education-related mentorship programs and ventures, and including where I taught in some of New Jersey's prisons. And after Princeton, I went straight to Stanford to start my PhD, also in comparative literature. And it was really at Stanford where I had really, really great conversations with my co-founder, Janos Perzel, who actually is the husband of one of my college best friends. And it was at Stanford where we really decided to start this venture together. And strangely enough, it was a dinner table conversation where we were talking about the untapped talent all around us, with grad students and PhD candidates who are passionate educators, who have so much to share with students, but who have a hard time finding and connecting with students who need their expertise. And so through that conversation, we just decided that, like, why not start this venture together? And so it brings me to now, where we've had this company running for a little over a year now. And I'm at the perfect juncture in my own PhD to take a bit of a break and to work on the business full time. And so looking back, I think there were so many experiences throughout my academic background and through my schooling that have led me to become interested in education. But it's really interesting because I never thought I would be in business, or I never thought I would become an entrepreneur. That's what brought me here today.
Wow. So when it comes to what you co-founded, right? You co-founded Polygens. What is it all about, and what do you envision for it long term?
Yeah. So Polygens is, strictly speaking, an online research academy where students, predominantly middle school and high schoolers, get a chance to be paired with researchers in their field of academic interest to execute a unique bite-sized research project. And we have mentors in fields ranging from computational biology to business to fashion design to French and Spanish literature to, like, machine learning. So basically, whatever a student might potentially be interested in, we most probably have a mentor for that kind of project. And our vision basically is to become the go-to marketplace for project-based learning and research mentorship. What we want is for students who have interests that either lie outside of their high school or home institutions, or with interests and talents beyond what their institutions can cater to, we want them to be able to connect with someone who is an expert in that field and execute a cool, interesting project that they could potentially use for college admissions or just have a pet project that they work on the side. And obviously the super long-term goal would be to transform education systems around the world to really promote project-based learning as a mode of education and of learning. And also, in addition to our paying program where students pay to enroll, we also have a growing pro bono program where we offer our services for free or for a drastically reduced rate for students from low-income backgrounds. And Polygens and me and also my co-founder Janosz were all very committed to alleviating education inequality and to close that gap. And so that's something we're really conscious of as well.
So Chin, you know, when you were younger, right, while living in Hong Kong, you taught new immigrants who did not speak Cantonese or English how to speak these languages. Furthermore, at Princeton, you founded something called PrEP, which focused on going into the New Jersey jails and teaching inmates life skills and job interview skills in order to improve their future. What did these experiences teach you, and how did it kind of lead into Polygens and what you created?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think all of these experiences that you mentioned, they're volunteer experiences and also sort of like social impact oriented education experiences. And I think all of these made me a lot more committed to the principle of education accessibility and equity. And I think they also taught me that I often have as much to learn from my students as they have to learn from me. And what that means is that a lot of times when I remember during those high school summers where I taught at this small NGO where we worked with new immigrants, mainly mainland Chinese immigrants and children from mainland China to Hong Kong, a lot of times what I would have planned for the class would not necessarily be what would be most beneficial for these children. And I think looking back, sort of the teaching feedback that I got from these students has been invaluable in teaching me to listen to my users, which in this case is students, and what they need from me and what would most benefit their own academic and intellectual journeys might not necessarily be what I planned, you know, what I cooked out of my head during my lesson planning time. And so definitely like listening to what my users need has been something that this experience has really helped me with learning. And in the case of my experience teaching in prisons, I guess I can give you a little bit more context. So PrEP was a program that I started where we taught job readiness and societal reintegration skills to inmates who will be released soon from prisons. And we taught in 4 to 5 different prisons all across New Jersey near the Princeton area, including some male prisons, some juvenile prisons, and also some female prisons. And I felt like that experience was really more a test for me than really a test for my students. It was really a test of how much an Ivy League educated international students can really bring to real life concerns of inmates who are about to go on parole or who are about to leave. And I think it made me confront my ivory tower education and ivory tower bubble a lot more, and to think long and hard about whether there even is anything of value I can bring to my students. And I can give you an example. When I first designed the curriculum, I prepared general interview questions, resume writing materials, things that I used to craft my own resume and my own cover letters for internships or even for college. But more often than not, my students' questions would stump me and I would have to go back and do a lot more research before going back to them and answering their questions. For example, one of my students had been in prison for, I think, about 20 to 30 years. She was an older woman. She was a 65-year-old woman at the Edna Mann Prison, which is a female prison in New Jersey. And I remember when I was teaching her a class on resume writing, she had actually asked me what email is because she had never used it, had never heard of it. And sort of technology access in prisons is obviously very limited as well. And so the class ended up sort of pausing and I had to explain to her what the internet was and how email worked. And so situations like this really made me realize what kind of, or like how to shape my own teaching to fit the needs of my students and to really listen to what they need and want. And it was a very, very humbling experience, definitely.
Yeah, it seems quite interesting. I mean, especially when it comes to this aspect of having an experience that not many people really have. I mean, it's quite unique in its own way.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jin, when it comes to ed tech, it seems like you've, you know, been involved in it for quite a while, for a good amount of your career. And what are some of the trends you're seeing and how it's developing in East Asia?
Yeah, so East Asia is a very interesting space when it comes to ed tech, especially because of the switch towards online learning that we're seeing, partly because, you know, as technology develops further, online learning and virtual learning environments will become more and more of the norm. But also, I think in light of COVID, the whole world, but also including East Asia, is really switching to online platforms, partly because schools are shutting down and students are moving to Zoom classrooms, but also because it's just more convenient and you can connect people from different parts of the world or the city to each other in ways that were never before available. And so a lot of edtech companies that are founded, I think, and that have made a big splash and influence in East Asia are companies that are focused on virtual learning. And one of these that I can think of is VIP Kid, right? This is a company that is founded around the mission of English learning, and language learning in general is a huge industry within East Asian edtech, I think, in particular with English language learning. And I think the other two sectors that are pretty dominant within East Asian edtech is college admissions, so college consulting, test prep, that kind of stuff, as well as subject-based tutoring. So for example, like if a student needed help with an IB exam in physics or with AP exam in APUSH. And so I think as education in the US and the UK or sort of like continue to be a prestige marker, a lot of companies will continue to pop up that will be dealing with this side of college admissions and helping students with the college application process. And I think these companies are and will continue to be on the rise, at least for the foreseeable future. And especially with test prep as well. Although I'm not sure if you've seen, but the UC, so the University of California system, recently announced that they will be phasing out standardized testing from requirements for admission, so the SAT and the ACT. So perhaps that sector of edtech will be impacted because of this wave of decisions, starting with the UC and other liberal arts colleges. But I think college admissions as an industry will still definitely be a very big one in East Asia, at least. And in terms of edtech that is sort of more brick and mortar and not like virtual, I think having come from Hong Kong, I know for a fact that the brick and mortar tutoring industry is still very much booming and is one of the most lucrative industries of all time. So I think that trend will definitely continue to be on the rise.
Interesting. I was just about to also mention, I was about to say, yeah, the UC systems were recently about to not allow for these standardized tests, right? And so what is your take on that? Do you think it's a positive or negative thing? Do you feel neutral about it? How do you kind of see it further developing down the line?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I actually, at Polygens, we actually wrote a blog post recently responding to that, to the UC's decision to remove standardized testing or phase out standardized testing. And I think what I think about it is that I think it's a really good thing, because I think standardized testing promotes the wrong kind of learning, the wrong kind of pedagogy, and the wrong kind of studying techniques. I think the SAT and ACT tests how well you are able to take the SAT and ACT rather than how good of a communicator, writer, mathematics student you are. And I think that with the phasing out of these standardized testing, students have a lot more opportunity to showcase their talents, their interests, and their ability to perform independent inquiry through precisely programs like Polygens or through any kind of independent projects that they work on. And I think standardized testing is helpful insofar as it gives, you know, a standardized way of judging students relative to one another. But I think moving forward, holistic evaluations of students, including their ability to perform independent inquiry, to engage in research, I think that will become much more indicative of a bar of how to judge students than standardized testing will be. So I'm hopeful in that like this trend will continue and that other schools will also phase out standardized testing in favor of other measures that are perhaps a bit more holistic in their evaluation of students. And hopefully PolyGents can become a big part of that in helping students showcase their own talents through working on their own cool projects.
That's a very interesting perspective and a perfect transition into our next question. You are very focused on independent-based project learning and believe that it is where the future of education is going. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Asian educational culture as a whole is still very rooted in rote learning. While this program really picks at allowing students to do their own things and finding their passion that way, do you think that this gap will at some point converge in the future?
That is a very thorny and good question. And I think that this gap that you're mentioning is precisely one that PolyGents seeks to address and to help close in some meaningful way. And while PolyGents doesn't only offer or restrict our services to students in Asia, I think by virtue of being online, we are naturally attractive to a lot of students in Asia and obviously also accessible to students all over the world. And I think that if we were to tackle this problem on an institutional level, meaning on a policy level, whether it's education policy, reform, or political change, it would require a much bigger education budget than a lot of countries in the world right now can afford, as well as, I think, a much more robust system of teacher benefits, teacher training, and also a general revamping of status of teachers in different societies. And I think currently school systems around the world simply don't have the resources to cater to the interests, needs, and wants of individual students as much as they would like to. And as you know, curricula all around the world are designed to fit sort of the average middle line student. And a lot of students both above and below that average get left out, whether it's feeling bored at school or they find it really difficult to catch up or to sort of follow along in classes. And so any outliers within that average student profile really gets left out in public school systems in many different societies. And I think this one size fits all system obviously is something that we have in a lot of societies now, and it may be the best we can do at this moment. But I definitely think that PolyGents, as Janosz and I have envisioned it to be, is something that can really come in and remedy the situation for those students who feel unfulfilled at school. And so, for example, Janosz and I feel very strongly about PBL, meaning project-based learning, and individualized learning as a way forward in education globally, because that's how we received our own intellectual awakening. And for both of us, we were lucky enough to have mentors who were high school teachers, but who also went out of their way to nurture us and help us develop passion projects on the side. I know for a fact that, for example, Janosz, when he was in high school, he had a physics teacher who really set aside time to help him because he saw that Janosz was talented and really helped him develop projects on the side, teach him extra things. And for myself, it was my eighth grade English teacher who spent a lot of extra time nurturing me, giving me readings, discussing things with me. And so it's obviously really hard the way many countries' school systems are right now. It's very hard to ask already overworked and underpaid teachers to spend this kind of individualized attention and time on individual students. And so obviously, while I think there is hope in education policy to increase the budget and to hire more teachers, to have smaller classes so that students can get more individualized attention, we thought that, you know, starting a company that would address this issue would be a faster way of going about it while education lobbyists continue to work on wider education policy reform.
Very well said. I mean, you EdTech in itself is a quite a difficult industry, right? The two, I think, most difficult industries out there are the financial services and education, mainly because where the financial system is today and where education is today is exactly the same as where it was 200 years ago, right? Everyone's still sitting behind desks. But back then, maybe people were using chalk. But today, people are using whiteboard or a smart board, right? Of some sort.
Or Zoom.
Yeah, or Zoom, right? So I guess before we wrap up the call with our last question, I wanted to ask you a question as an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. As an entrepreneur in itself, being an entrepreneur is just very difficult. It's not an easy path. It's a rocky road. And what are some of the difficulties you faced up until now? And what did you kind of do to resolve them?
Yeah, I would say actually on my road to become an entrepreneur, I've encountered some of the most difficult emotional and intellectual challenges I've ever faced in my short life so far. So I had my dinner table conversation with Janosch about starting the company around a year and a half, 2 years ago. And since then, I've had incredible sort of changes to my life, including putting my PhD on hold. And that really was one of the most difficult decisions I've had to make so far, partly because I sort of, ever since going to college, I was sort of on a one-track road and mindset to maybe becoming a professor, or at least like entering academia and education as an educator in some way. Business or entrepreneurship never even crossed my mind until I talked to Janosch and we became really good friends and started this company together. And I'm generally a very risk averse person. So I'm generally someone who would definitely want to take the safer road, even if it takes longer or even if it's harder. And so I never really thought about taking time off to explore other things. And so taking that risk of pausing and working on something that's completely new and unknown to me, was a huge, caused me a lot of emotional turmoil while I was making that decision, but also is one of the most rewarding decisions I've made yet, because I feel like, what's the fun of life without taking any risks, right? And I think that decision has taught me so much more than really school can ever have taught me, in that it taught me about risk-taking, it taught me how to think about priorities in life, and also how to take a leap of faith in something that I'm not sure if it will work, but I have a lot of faith in.
Truly well said, and this perfectly transitions into our last question of the call. What piece of advice would you give to people out there from the journey you've had thus far in life?
I think I would say two things. One is something that I mentioned earlier, which is risk-taking. I think learning to appreciate and to love and to enjoy the thrill of risk-taking is something that is so important, whether you're aspiring to be an academic, whether you're aspiring to be an entrepreneur, or anything in between. I think having a suitable and healthy love for risk-taking is going to serve anybody and everybody very well. And I think even in my short time working on the company and building it with my co-founder, I've taken already so many risks throughout this really exhilarating journey. And I really think that I could not have done it without a healthy dose of risk taking. And I really have to thank my co-founder Janosch for this kind of psychological support, and to have a wonderful partner in crime is really something that will help, or has really helped me with taking risks. And I think the second thing that has really served me well throughout life, both academically and professionally, and that I would really recommend to anybody who is looking for ways to improve their own journey, is intellectual curiosity. And I think whether this curiosity manifests itself in reading about different issues and cultures, or learning languages in my case, or in learning about different industries, I think curiosity is really what will allow you to expand your horizons in ways you never could have imagined. And I think I credit a lot of what I have accomplished and done and learned so far to my innate sense of curiosity. And I think if there's any way for people to be able to cultivate that in themselves, that's definitely something I would recommend.
Jen, for the listeners out there who are interested in reaching out to you, what would be the best point of contact?
Yeah, so they can simply email me at jin@polygence.org. So that's jin@polygence.org. Feel free to email me and we can talk about any of the things I talked about today, or if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to chat more.
Perfect. It was a pleasure having you on Geeks of the Valley.
Thank you so much, Kunal.